One of the oldest stories in the Taoist tradition is about Peng, the Great Peng, this magnificent, magical, immense bird who had wingspans of miles. It was a massive bird, and it could fly for a year and a half down to the southern oceans of this globe. And when it did, it would land down there by the water and it would flap its wings and would stir up the seas and perhaps be considered a way of kind of moving forward the various natural elements and the flow of existence on this planet. Now, Peng, being this massive bird and having all of that weight to carry and being thought to have been able to travel for miles and miles and miles, was obviously understood to be a legendary character by many. And when the dove and the cicada heard about the Great Peng, they laughed. They said, "That's a silly idea." And they said, "Listen, pal, if you want to tell me about the Great Peng, if you want to tell me about some great bird that's able to travel for miles and miles, so high up in the sky that all it sees is the blue of the sky above and the blue of the sea beneath, just a sea of blue." "That's not true," said the cicada and the little baby dove, because those cats were thinking they have to flap really, really hard just to get up to the top of the trees, let alone the high atmosphere. And so they didn't believe in it, and they scoffed. And yet, the moral of the story, well, we'll talk about the moral of the story, but what the response is that the Peng is able to rise up on these winds. This massive wind is able to carry the massive bird. And in doing so, it is able to show something true about both spiritual reality and physical reality. It's not clear, though, to scholars what the point of that story is. So that, friends, is what we're going to explore with you on today's show about the Great Peng. Again, this mythical Chinese bird, but really, as it becomes the important opening story for the Xuanzu, one of the most interesting Taoist texts. Certainly, we love the Tao Te Ching, but one of the most fun Taoist texts, if we just had two, would be the Tao Te Ching and the Xuanzu. And Xuanzu is more fun in many ways because it has stories and myths and playfulness. We're going to talk about all that, but most importantly, we're going to talk about what it means for you. Friend, if you're listening to this, maybe there are things that you think are insurmountable in your life. Maybe the Peng is pointing to this idea that by rising above it, by rising on the power of whatever it is that is in your life, however immense it might be, that that is how you can get to a certain kind of perspective, and from there you can see some kind of hope. Well, we will see as Stacy and Sydney join me in our conversation about the Great Peng. Stay with us. Keep your hats on tight. Let's go.
All ahead full.
All right, kiddos, before we begin, I just want to say we are swimming in a sea of vinyl.
Literally.
We're swimming in a sea of vinyl. Sydney, are you sad that we cleaned up the house and then now we have just nothing but records all over the floor? How do you feel about that?
I think it's great. I think that's ideal. And it's been really fun because there's all kinds of stuff in there. Right now I'm looking at a Spanish strings record. There's some 20s music in there.
The Roaring 20s.
You know, some random shit. Pat Benatar.
Tribute to Steve Goodman, which is interesting.
And actually, Pat Benatar record is missing, which is...
Just the cover.
We have just the cover, not the record, because I was a little sad about that. I used to like Pat Benatar when I was younger. In fact...
I was excited.
It was the music video of her getting in an airplane and flying away that I loved.
Yeah, like, I'm going to do that.
What was that?
I don't... I can't remember now. I could probably do some research or whatever, but I just remembered... You know, it was like I was drawn to the Amelia Earhart story. And then, of course, there's Pat Benatar and her. I was like, one day I'm going to.
Well, I'm sorry we had the Pat Benatar album without the innards.
Yeah.
Also the Abbey Road album.
Without the outards.
Without the covered.
So we got, yeah, so it's fun to have, learn about these new people and these new records too.
The great thing about Portland is, you know, you can just take a walk with the dog and then come back with some booty. We got
two new chairs, a tree.
Four new chairs. We like four new chairs. Beautiful.
A total
tree.
Of yeah. Six or a total of five.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and we were walking chairs. Today to get some bread, and we passed by a chair, and we said, "Nah, we got enough chairs." So we're riding along, and this is fun. But then we saw seven boxes. If you take the seven boxes, don't be rummaging through them. Just take all seven boxes. And I love that. That actually inspires me because it's like a lottery. What's the grab bag? Yeah. You know, and a lot of it is, you know, there's some Lawrence Welk stuff in there, but it's kind of fun to mix up your listening tastes by hearing, you know, what other people might have had.
You got your first John Denver album?
Yes. Yeah, right. I have a poem about John Denver and why I don't own his albums because they're too sentimental. And I got a beautifully sentimental album that I'm treasuring.
It makes me cry.
We also got some...
lots of 70s albums with people I've never heard of before. Like, really obscure 70s.
Janice Ian, very cool.
I love her.
Yeah,
we listened to her last night. She was great.
And then all of a sudden, I go deep into her life, and she has recently stopped touring because of something on her vocal cords. It's not life-threatening, but it was kind of sad to hear that she's done with her performing career. But she came out as lesbian... after, you know, a successful career and an interesting kind of activist life after this music. So it's kind of fun. You pick up the album. I listen to Night Rain by Janice Ian. I'm like, all right, I don't know what this is. There's the interesting thing about all these albums, and this is the thing that is I would say, unsettling in some ways, is that there was this phenomenon, apparently, in the 50s and 60s of songwriters who were white dudes. And then on the cover of the album is some irrelevant, random white woman.
Just like in a Hawaiian outfit or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, just trying to look pretty, right? So it's very, very strange. I'm trying to figure out what this is. And it's like, I guess if you're flipping through the albums and, you know, you're kind of...
Something catches your eye.
Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, what does that have to do with The Great Pang? I'm not sure. Maybe we'll find a connection, but that's where we're at, right? We were enjoying a weekend here as we're recording, kind of looking at the things that we've collected from the world around us, free stuff. Maybe that has a connection to it. Here's the thing. Sometimes we go long, long, long. Maybe we will. Who knows, friends? You can stick with us and see where it goes. But the question we're going to ask each time we think about one of these symbols is... How do we interpret it? How do we interpret this mythology, this symbolism? This is, of course, a long, long-standing tradition of this Great Pang. The Great Pang, by the way, starts out as a giant fish, a coon, and then it transforms into this great
bird
thing. And I think it's, to me, I didn't even know what it meant at first. And I still don't necessarily know what it means, but I knew that it was a profound concept, that there was this bird who could do these great things by flying vast, vast expanses, and then the little beings just mock the whole concept. They say, this is woo. This is no good. And yet...
It's not possible.
Yeah, and yet it's totally possible if you understand the Great Pangs, you know, even the physics of the Great Pang.
Well, think about this. I mean, we... all of a sudden have airplanes, right? And we're able to get these
seems absurd.
Large yeah. pieces of metal up in the air flying for hours on end. I mean, that's pretty crazy to think of the weight of a plane and being able to get it up into the sky, you know?
It's a very similar story. So let me tell you the two historical interpretations of this myth, and then I'm interested in what you two think would be a way that you would interpret this. Because I think what's fun about it is if you are coming across this image, there can be things that other folks can stimulate through literature or art that help you to think about this and apply it to your life. But sometimes the fun part is just applying it to our lives. Ultimately, the very earliest interpretation of this myth is related to this idea of equality, which is pretty cool. And the meaning is for for that tradition, this idea that if you're frustrated by how far you can get in the world, like you're a cicada or you're a dove and you can't fly as far, don't worry. You've got smaller wings. So if you think about proportion, the way that we can do these little things in our lives is related to the resources we've got, so we don't beat ourselves up, right? Mm-hmm. And there's an egalitarianism to it. Sometimes people have a lot of resources, they can do some things, and then other people have few resources, they can, you know, do other things, but then proportionally, we do what we can with the resources that we've got. That's the first
intention. And it's our diversity in each of the different things and each of everybody's abilities that actually paint a fuller picture of what is possible in this world, right? If we were all these huge great big birds, we'd have to be pretty spread out. It sounds like this thing has lots of big wings and not everybody would fit, right?
Perhaps.
Like, that takes up a lot of space.
Perhaps it'll be harmonious.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that there's different gifts and abilities that all of us have, and I think that makes the world more beautiful than if everybody
definitely
was the same.
So option A in the oldest interpretive tradition is that everybody has just different circumstances. Mm-hmm. And that gives us a certain grace for ourselves. The second interpretation is the one that almost all modern scholars and New Age people, you know, people who have ideas about wellness and spirituality tend to gravitate toward. And that is the idea that if you can get to a place of enlightenment, you could be like the Great Pang and you can see the whole world from a different vantage point. So again, the oldest version is this idea that, well, look, it's just mathematical proportion. It's ratios. Sometimes if you think it's impossible for a boat to float on the water that's made out of metal, yes, unless you understand physics. Mm-hmm. So there's a very secular interpretation of the Great Pang, and that is, to the uninitiated observer, flying in such a way that you could get a big metal tube up into the sky seems impossible, but it's totally possible if you understand the way to harness the physical world. Likewise, we were, Stacy, sitting on the Columbia River, and we saw this massive piece of metal just floating down the river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really fascinating, too, to see this super long, big boat, which when you look across the other side of the river and the people look like little tiny dots, and then you know that this boat is hovering way closer to that side and still looks massively huge, then you can kind of tell in perspective, like, how big this boat is. And it was, like, so far down the river before we started seeing the massive waves come onto the shore that were, you know, I mean, not massive, but they were, you know, decent-sized waves coming crashing on the shore. And it was amazing to see the distance of, like, it just shows you, again, the depth of the water, the bigness of the boat that's going to come so far when the boat is like out of sight almost. And then you're getting now the waves of it, you know? Anyway, it was fascinating.
I'm thinking about this song now, Broad Ripple is Burning, and he's really sad and he just went through a breakup or some shit, and he's sitting on an airplane and he talks about how all the people look like eggs from perspective. You know,
eggs.
They just look like little dots, but to him, they looked like eggs on the ground.
Well, we've often, you know, when you fly when you're a kid, you say that everybody looks like ants. But it's interesting that
eggs is kind of weird. Yeah.
Well, it's a possibility. It's
yeah, it's a perception.
But I think this is part of the difference, I think, between the Eastern, you know, Taoist tradition before we get to Western New Age self-help kind of stuff. Mm. I'm not even down on the Western self-help stuff so much. It's just that they're different. And I think that original austere concept of this is what you've got, you know, make use of it, understand proportion, versus you can soar like, you know, with wings like eagles, you can soar above all these problems and see everything. That second interpretation is also attractive. What I like about all of this is when we come across a myth or an image we're free to use it for whatever we need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the message that we need to hear? Sometimes we can spontaneously, you know, reflect on these things
right.
and see what we need to hear for ourselves. But if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, all right, what do I need to be thinking about in my life? Maybe you need to think about both. Maybe there are these ways in which you need to be easier on yourself. There's all of this global challenge, you know, the environment, the economy, war. You can't deal with that. You're not in a position to deal with that. So take the little things that you've got in your life and make that work. Also, understanding the broader perspective through meditation and mindfulness and philosophy and just, you know, kind of contemplating the big picture will help you understand all of the little sufferings. These are true. But Stacey, what was your, you know, before we talked about what the historical interpretations were, what was your basic take on what this probably meant?
Well, with us sort of, for lack of a better word, marinating in the Tao Te Ching, it reminds me a lot of more of, say, yin versus yang and surfing the Tao. And so when, you know, here's this bird, if it was, I mean, I'm envisioning that it's not just flapping its wings the entire time as it's flying. I'm envisioning it soaring, you know, with the current of the atmosphere so that it has the energy to live and keep going, because it's not really expending that much energy if it's just soaring, you know, in its way, letting the world and the atmosphere take it on its journey. If, you know, the little birds, they have to do a lot of flapping in order to get where they're going. And that, I think, would be untenable if you had to flap your way all the way to that great distance. You know, it's the same thing of even when, you know, I always have thought about the fact, you know, we've lived near the ocean. I've often, you know, been where we're on lakes and rivers and boats and things. And if for any reason I found myself, you know, not like, say, capsized or something, I know that if I'm just trying to swim with all my effort to shore, I would eventually get too tired and drown. I know how to float. And so I know that the key to surviving in that moment, especially if you don't have a life jacket, I mean, obviously trying to find driftwood or something else to support you.
A little raft, maybe.
Yeah, all of that. But I'm saying that if you don't have those things, that being able to float and just sort of let, you know, hopefully the current will take you into the right direction. I know when there's the rip currents in the ocean, if you're trying to swim and beat it, you know, and get yourself where you're going to panic because you're going to try to go straight to the shore, and you're going to find that if you just allow the current to take you, you're going to go further out, but it'll also kind of eventually at the end when it spits you back, it'll spit you back in.
It's like similar to life, how you can't control it's going to happen to you. The universe, I don't think you get cancer as like a punishment. I don't think bad things happen to people because it's like a punishment. The universe is just kind of
things
random.
Are going to happen.
Things happen.
It's part of living. It's part of, you know, being a living being. And so how much can we sort of surf the waves of life, surf what we've been given, and, you know, and then what do we do with that? You know, if we struggle and kick against it all the time, we're going to get worn out. It's going to tire us out.
And it's life-threatening.
And we
like,
can
right?
drown in the whatever it is, you know, the either the misery or the pain or whatever. I mean, all of it, right? And
flailing about is dangerous.
It expends a lot of energy.
Yeah.
It exhausts you.
So if you're asking the question, could I get to the South Seas like a cicada flapping? No. You can't. But there's migratory birds. By the way, our little beautiful little hummingbirds, you know, they can travel great distances as well. Now, they're flapping all the time. But, you know, the idea is, can you ride those winds?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a metaphor for surfing the Tao. Sydney, when you first heard the story, what was your thought?
My first interpretation of it was it kind of reminded me of dream travel. Like there's lucid dreaming or meditation, but sometimes in my dreams, I'll try to channel certain things or try to, you know, say, communicate with Augie, things like that. Listen to messages from the universe or whatever. But I interpret it as like dream travel. Mm. So the bird seems, this whole thing seems illogical, right? People are like, oh, that can't happen. But I do think it's real. It's sort of like getting affirmations and signs through small everyday life things, you know? I was feeling pretty sad last night, but then I was kind of like, well, if I can't sleep, I'm going to channel this energy into just making tomorrow a little bit nicer for myself. So I made blood orange juice, and I pre-chopped onions, and just kind of planned out some things for my day. And sometimes that's all you can do.
Yeah,
we've long loved the blood orange.
Yeah, and I could imagine, you know, yeah, that's a beautiful picture that, you know, you paint of sort of like that dream world of, because the bird has the blue sky, the blue waters that
and
it's in between.
Some people don't believe in this type of communication or the ability to lucid dream. And I had done it previously in my life, but I stopped doing it because I would get sleep paralysis whenever I would do it. But since Augie died, I haven't really had sleep paralysis. I think it's because a certain part of me that feared, like, mortality in a sense, like, that fear died. Part of my brain that feared, like, dying before you die died when Augie died, because I, in a certain sense, was left with, like, nothing left to lose.
Also, with the dream, like, world, is it takes you out of the details of the moment of being in this life. So, like, you know, as I envision the great pang, like, sort of soaring above it all, and so that you're not, like, you're not in the midst or the depths of...
Like, I believe that Augie's spirit is still alive, and I feel like he's flying around having adventures and seeing beautiful things. And, you know, there's a certain sense where I feel like he's even like, oh, man, I wish you could be here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a forest nymph, and you could just, like, cross the bridge and be in a great place where, like, the lakes are made of honey, and there's, like, plums everywhere, you know, and everything's just delightful. But, you know, you have to kind of do the hero's journey, I guess, or you have to, like, cross the marathon or whatever, you know.
I think that's an important thing, because, like, if you're the cicada or the dove, you know, it's important for the cicada and the dove in the story to recognize, no, the great pang flying is possible. It might not be possible for you.
Right.
And I think the other thing that this leads me to think about is something that we've more recently been going over and over, and that is, not everybody is in a place to be able to authentically look in the mirror, to use a metaphor, you know, like
some people never do.
And maybe it's not right for them, you know, like
some
maybe
people can't handle it. They have to live in a certain kind of reality that they're comfortable with.
And it's okay. And I used to think, no. You have to be able to see things from the perspective of the great pang, as it were. But maybe sometimes people should just be where they are, and if they're happy to be where they are, and this is the world that they're navigating, the idea that I've got to try to, like, go in and tinker with that is not healthy.
No.
It's problematic. And so I think, you know, like, if you find yourself in this kind of great pang state, you're seeing things from this lofty, enlightened perspective, or at least it feels like that for you, you might have this tendency to try to go around to everybody else in your life and get them to see things from that perspective. Sometimes they're not ready. Sometimes they don't
I think all of us have done in our personal relationships, and kind of just realized that there's certain people you can't help, or they don't want to be helped right now.
In that way.
Yeah.
Well, and also there sometimes is a need in, you know, people to want to fix other people according to what they think is best for somebody else. And I would say that, you know, that people can't fix somebody. they can be there with them. They can hear their pain. They can, you know,
that
accompany
makes me
them
think of
through
another
difficult times.
Growlers song. It's called Good Advice. And it says, there's nothing as depressing as good advice. Nobody wants to hear how to live right. their life.
Right.
And it's wow. hilarious. But it's so true because, I mean, you know, like, it's really easy to give good advice to other people. But when you're actually doing your own life, you know, like, how often do you follow your own advice? Or yeah. do you yeah. follow your own advice?
Well, and think about how many times, too, people might be in, like, you know, certain relationships that might be unhealthy or whatever. And all of a sudden the person's like now complaining and maybe they do a breakup with that person. And then all these people come around like, oh, I'm so glad you did that. That was great. You know, and then they get back together again. Right.
And then it's like, oopsies.
And then it's like, oh,
that's why it's like that kind of shit. Just stay in the middle, friends.
Yes.
Just,
right.
Don't take sides. That's what my client says about whoever her kids date. She's like, whenever they come over here complaining about their girlfriend or boyfriend, I don't get involved. I say, because they're going to be hanging out again next weekend.
Right,
and then
right.
she's then, like, now we're going to have a problem.
Yep.
But they're fine, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's best not to get in the middle of some of that stuff. Now, of course, if if somebody's being harmed, I mean, that's another story.
Different.
Yeah, if they're getting abused or something. But yeah, I mean, it's just... I think we all kind of, I don't know, it's easy to have this idea of wanting to fix other people based on what we think is best for others. And I think it's also a way for people to ignore their own issues. Mm. And like if they could go about being busy fixing other people and not address their own issues and the things that they need right. to for themselves.
Or sometimes
they can,
like,
it's a good distraction.
If you can't, and that can be positive or negative, I think. Like mm-hmm. it's kind of like when you're at the point of what's the point of life and you decide to help people or do some small
yeah.
goods
That's
in
different.
The world. It's like it's like a double-edged sword, you know? So it's finding that yin-yang, that balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think channeling my pain and my hurt into helping others, you know, at end of life, is I'm hugely passionate about, or even just to, you know, confront death, that kind of thing. Again, like, it's like there's, when you look at like what sorts of things really matter, you know, in this world, and, you know, you know, the story of Guan Yin and things like that, where, you know, just takes her pain and turns it to helping others. I think there's, you know, there's a beauty in that as well. Anyway.
So I think that a lot of times when there's all this debate about what this story means, that's not the way to necessarily perceive it. It's kind of like an oracle
card. I think like all of them are true.
They're all true.
Yeah. It's true yeah. to however you interpret it.
Right. And it's not that there's like different truths. Is this person helpful or unhelpful in my life? Are they problematic? No, there's no reason to think that we're talking about relativism. What we're talking about is the idea that this symbolic image, a myth, an archetype can help us to, you know, process things that we need to think about in ourselves. So sometimes it's like, give yourself compassion for having smaller wings.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Sometimes it's recognize that other people you want to help might have smaller wings. This isn't a judgment. It's just, where are they going to go from the spot that they're in now?
Well as don't maybe listen to naysayers.
Yeah.
You know, the Great Bang gets told that he can't, you know,
You can't fly. That's impossible.
Believe in
you know,
your stuff.
Then
I say some crazy shit.
Not...
I'm like, I don't care if anyone believes it.
Right.
I believe it.
Right.
Well, one of the things that's really funny about it in some of the tellings of the story is that the cicada and the dove are saying, hey, 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 hey. Sometimes you can go on a 3-day journey and you can just stop along the way and just nibble some food. But if you're going to go for months and months, you need to bring some processed food. You need to grind down your grain. You need to store it up. There's like all, you know, all these really smart things to do. And these are true, but they're just so caught up in the day-to-day issues of how you survive this life that they...
I'm just picture this great Peng now loaded down with all this gear, and so then they can't do the journey because
absolutely worst thing
because
yeah.
they packed.
Joy. It's like when you feel joy and then there's a problem all of a sudden everywhere around you.
Yeah,
that's like a curse I have sometimes.
And people are like, no, you can't. You're not allowed to do that. You need to go pack. You're like, well, I was having fun flying. You're like, and then all of a sudden, you're like, how come I can't fly anymore? Because you told me I had to bring all this stuff.
Yeah. You're weighted down.
I think, though, that ultimately, so yes, all of these things are true. But to me, when I first read this story in the Shuangzi, I thought, well, it's of course an indication of how to surf the Tao, which is instead of flapping as a little being or even as a big being, don't flap. To me, it's about not flapping. And yes, I do understand a lot of the new age type folks who want to say this story is about getting to a meditative position that allows you to see reality all around you and you can rise above all your suffering. I totally get that. But I think it's also, more importantly, actually, about the idea that the reason none of this made sense to the cicada or the dove is that they thought that the game was flapping. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever a new age meditation type teacher or something, if they're talking about this in a way that says to us that we need to flap harder so that we get higher, that's not the answer.
No.
The answer is don't flap at all.
In fact, stay away from that one.
Yeah, stay away from that one. Spread your wings and let the natural duh, let the power of virtue carry you up. Have integrity. Get spiritual healing in your own life and then just rise spontaneously rather than through work.
Right. It's the non-doing.
It is Wu Wei. It is flowing with the flow. It is very much like you said, Stacey, with the yin. And what's interesting is it seems like just a small difference in interpretation, whether you're going to flap up to the heights or you're just going to float up to the heights. I don't think it's a small difference. I think it's the whole difference. If you think that the way to get enlightenment is to work really hard at enlightenment, you will fail because you're missing the point.
Right. You got to like ease into it, relax into it.
Yeah. And I don't think that I'm necessary. I don't think that this
it's
is any
Buddhist.
It's very much. Well, I would say it's very Tao. And it's very Buddhist as well. If you're talking about like say Zazen, just like, just let nature flow. I don't think it's the same guy. Now I got to go look at this, but there is an article called Seeing and Hearing in Lao Tzu and Shuangzi, Harmony and Cacophony in the Panpipes of Heaven, in Hiding the World in the World Uneven, Discourses on Shuangzi, edited by Scott Cook, probably not the same Scott Cook that we love, who is the musician and the folk singer who sang about Guan Yin that we visited last summer. Maybe it is. I'll look it up.
That'd be cool.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's probably not too
uncommon.
Something
he might do.
Although it seems a little older. In any case, what's interesting about this is that If you think about the main message of it, I mean, first of all, there's something really beautiful about just the natural flow of the seas. We're feeling this now. There's the constant warm rain that comes in. When you have the climate change, you also have an odd awareness of nature more than we would have had before, because we can kind of feel how what's going to happen here. Now we look on our phones, and it's affecting our daughter down in
Santa Cruz.
And, right, so you can kind of feel like the cycle of the earth, you know, kind of flowing with the Great Peng. But most importantly, I think it's the idea that a lot of people have not had the blessing that we've had to be able to hang out near the Southwest deserts. So whether it's the California condor, which is a threatened species, but often a vulture or a raven. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you get the privilege of seeing if you live in the desert areas of the Southwest and traveling through that is we see these very large birds doing nothing and floating. And specifically, the
which helps with the identifying, because when you're like,
easy.
Wait, are they flapping? Okay, then if they're not flapping, it's probably a vulture.
The turkey vulture, a despised bird, you know, not seen. It's a carrion bird with an so-called ugly head, and there it is, and it's kind of like the Great Peng. I mean, I think
it's
that
just chilling.
If you really want to understand how do a lot of the Taoist sages get to where they want to go, they go there by looking at nature and drawing lessons from it. And that's the big lesson.
Interesting about the vulture, because, I mean, I think it definitely seems to get a bad rap, but it also is basically eating things that are already dead and help with break, you know, so it's not.
Yeah, it's very diet.
So if you think of it, it's kind of like a mushroom.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like not even having to try to expend the energy of capturing its prey. It's just looking for the
free
dead
food.
Beings, free foods. And then it helps, you know, it sort of helps break that down. And anyway, it's a fascinating concept to help, you know, clean up spaces.
That's a good point. So not only does it travel by being humble enough to ride on some other power, it's sustaining itself on something that nobody else wants.
It was literal waste, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that kind of takes us full circle to our little story about the records. I'm not sure how much joy I can get out of it long term, but I sure had a great weekend looking through these records, and it was free.
Yeah, just by, you happened to notice a posting of somebody putting records out there. We went down,
picked up all 7 boxes
10 minutes later, and there we go, you know. And then, like you said, free entertainment, learning about a lot of new people and hearing sounds like
also there was a person who owned these. This is somebody's personality.
Yeah.
This is somebody's entire life.
Yeah.
In a certain sense, it's
also
surely somebody died and this is their estate.
Oh, it has like,
this
to be.
This is somebody's record collection.
And it's and it's crazy also to think of like all of the human beings that recorded all of these albums and wrote these songs and, you know,
some stuff that might not even exist anywhere else. It's like these obscure, there was one 70s kind of psychedelic looking band, but it was all hand drawn and it was on like this old paper, you know,
it's fascinating.
That was just like interesting.
That's why I'm like, I do not want to get, I'm not going to donate or dispose of these in any way until I listen to every one of them and try to understand, like, obviously there was one or more people for every one of these vinyl records that thought this was worth
recording
for
and
the future.
Printing and producing. Like
and a lot of them will go
there.
Into dust. I mean, a lot of it people won't care about, you know, and maybe some of it's not, you know, I mean, you can't save everything. There's 1,000 voices, 10,000 voices at any given time. But to be able to honor and to think about what it is that they were taking in their lives, what was the suffering? What was the joy? Mm-hmm. How did they turn that into music? And why were they trying to share that? Sometimes it's opportunistic. Sometimes it's garbage.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Well, and there's one album that I really appreciated that was a tribute album to
Steve Goodman.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a dedicated to somebody's memory.
I didn't know who
Steve
Goodman was.
You have no idea what it is.
But I enjoyed that album of people.
I think that guy was great friends with him.
Yeah.
Seems like a good guy. I don't know.
Apparently the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band cared about him and John Prine and all this. And like, and so there you go. And so it's like hearing people's love.
Yeah.
That's something powerful too.
Yeah.
We're also excited that somebody's writing some kind of something down the road from us. We're really excited. There was like, there's something weird in Portland where people like to call their bars like really like negative, depressing names. It's kind of part of the culture, I suppose, like the No Fun Bar. It was a fun bar.
But then it's all colorfully lit up. So this building, when we moved in, it was still all under construction, but we could slowly see people painting the mural that's on the outside. And it's kind of this bluish, pinkish sky, and it looks so happy. There's these little cartoon characters on the closed sign.
It's called Sad Valley.
Yeah, Sad Valley.
We're like, that's the place for us.
I'm like,
some
I think
psychedelic
I'll love
outside
that bar.
Painting.
Yeah.
It's called Sad Valley. But I think that's probably, I mean, I don't know their story, but I'm hoping when we finally, when they open up, we'll ask them.
I want to get to meet them.
Yeah.
Figure out what's that about?
They had some kind of sadness, and then they turned it.
Can
into
you just
this,
read what they said,
bar.
Their little message statement or whatever?
Yeah.
Their little.
So if I go, it's, so I mean, you know, it's like one of those places where I'm hoping that they actually open, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, the world is always so difficult sometimes with, like, getting permits and all this. But here's, on their Instagram, there is beauty in the sunlight and the soft blue heaven above. Oh, the world is full of beauty. When the heart is full of love. Slowly, slowly it dawned on me. Now, why do I keep trying? The answer is very simple, and almost all of you know the answer already. The answer is, once the seed has been planted, once you have been born again, do you have any choice? I don't know. Anyway, it's like there's this bar that's going in down the road, and they're channeling something. Right. And that's why I want to support that.
Yeah, I feel like they have a story.
And they feel like they have no choice but to follow through with this seed that has been planted.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's fascinating. And the reference to love.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool place. Oh, and also it's supposed to be a Twin Peaks adjacent vibe.
Yes.
Which... I mean, that's almost
right,
if I designed a bar. Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
I'm telling you, I
have to work there.
It's like maybe they're just pulling on my heartstrings. I hope that they open up soon. But it is a vibe. It is a vibe, and they've got cool merchandise already. They got T-shirts. They got Sad Valley, the two cracking two.
I wish
eggs.
I could go now.
I know. Hey,
what
Sad
if they magically open when Anna visits? That'd be fun.
That'd be so great.
All right.
Friends, whatever you have, whatever you want to turn into magic, whatever kind of inner alchemy that you want to produce into some kind of beautiful art for yourself, thanks for joining us for this conversation about the great Peng. Spread your wings, friends.
And find deep peace upon peace. Thank you so much, friends, for joining us for this episode of the Protect Your Noggin podcast. You want to join in on the conversation? We'd love to respond to your questions or comments on a future show. You can record a message by going to protectyournoggin.org and clicking on the blue voice message button. And don't worry about getting it perfect, since you'll have 5 minutes and a chance to preview your message before sending. You can also send an email if you're not comfortable with leaving a voice message. Please also follow us on Twitter at @thePYNP. And rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you found this show of any help, why not share it with a friend? Until next time, peace upon peace, friends.
But he said there wasn't any leather. He said I was going out of my mind.
Not going out of your mind. You're slowly and systematically being driven out of your mind.
Why?
That's because you found this letter in love too much.